Hello, this is Sharon, and I'm bringing you the Pantograph for today, Wednesday, November 11th, 2020. We'll begin our reading on the front page with an article entitled Still Serving. Monocle 84 continues mission in Legion Honor Guard. Jerry Monocle's service to his country isn't limited to the time he spent in the army in Germany in the 1950s. It's the time he's spent in Central Illinois cemeteries, schools, long-term care facilities, at community events, and on the steps of the McLean County Museum of History during the past 18 years. Monocle is a member of the Honor Color Guard of American Legion Carl S. Martin Post 635 in Normal and Lewis E. Davis Post 56 in Bloomington. The Honor Guard conducts military rites at veterans' funerals and Color Guard presentations at schools and community events, including for Memorial Day and Veterans Day. The Honor Guard will honor those who have served with a ceremony beginning at 11 minutes to 11 a.m. today on the east steps of the museum, 200 North Main Street, Bloomington. Monocle will be among Honor Guard members there, but it's not because he seeks attention. "I joined because it's an organization that serves the country," he said of the American Legion and the Honor Guard. "It's a camaraderie among people who are veterans." The stereotype that some people have of veterans groups as we're good old boys getting drunk, "We don't even have alcohol at Post 635, Monocle said of the post of which he is a member. But Monocle has been more than a member of the Honor Guard. From spring 2008 until earlier this year, he was the Honor Guard commander. "I had to step down for health reasons," said Monocle, 84, of Carlock, "but I'm still a part of it." The Honor Guard recently presented Monocle with a plaque for his years of leadership, which saluted his participation in nearly 1,100 military rites at veterans' funerals. "I was really pleased but very humbled by it," Monocle said on Tuesday. "They are a great team. I enjoyed my years as commander. I was more of a coordinator than a commander. I just wanted to be like the old soldier and fade away. But they," other Honor Guard members said, "you're not going to fade away." "Jerry is one of the most thoughtful and caring gentlemen I've ever met," said Jerry Vogler, superintendent of the McLean County Veterans Assistant Commission, and also a member of the Honor Guard and Post 635 adjunct. "He's a great listener to try to come up with solutions that work and are acceptable to the vast majority of people," Vogler said. "When he disagrees with you, he does it in a gentlemanly manner, and he's proud of his service." Monocle grew up in Normal. He and his three brothers, Dwayne, Dana, and Larry, all served in the Army. "We learned from our father, who, even though he was too old to be drafted, tried to enlist in the Army during World War II, but was turned down because of health reasons," Monocle said. Monocle served in the Army from 1954 to 1958 and spent 2.5 of those years in Germany. He was in the 7th Army's Ordnance Corps, supplying artillery and other equipment. "We knew we would be targeted in a bombing attack," Monocle said. "There was always the threat of a Russian invasion, and I'm sure that would have happened if we weren't there. We were 20 minutes from an air attack and 2 hours from a ground attack. It was pretty tense, more tense than the general population realized. At least once a month, there was an alert and defenses were set up, but the attack never came," he said. "I did enjoy my time in Germany," said Monocle, who was a specialist fourth class, which he said was equivalent to a corporal. "To me, it was gratification. We were doing a job that was necessary. After Monocle was honorably discharged in 1958, he returned to Bloomington Normal, and in 1960 began a 40-year career at the Pantograph, working in the composing room, assembling ads and articles. He and his wife Phyllis have been married for 58 years. They have a daughter, Tammy, a son, Lee, and 5 grandchildren. Monocle said the Honor Guard, which he joined in 2002, has averaged 91 funerals a year for the past 10 years, but numbers are down this year because of the COVID-19 pandemic. When the state guidelines went into effect in March, limiting the number of people who could gather in public, the Honor Guard suspended its military rights at veterans' funerals, Vogler said. They resumed during summer and included a communal service. Even so, the veterans during funerals try to remain 6 feet from each other, wear their masks when they present the flag to the next of kin, and try to avoid mingling with family members, Vogler said. Even with the suspension, the Honor Guard already has done 67 military rites this year. Monocle thinks Veterans Day is important because it keeps veterans fresh in the minds of the public. "We feel it's really important for people to see a veteran," Monocle said. "It presents a positive image. On Veterans Day, it's good for people to pause a while and think about what veterans have done and continue to do, which is to protect our country and our interests. When you see a veteran, thank them for their service," Monocle said. "It seems trite, but I think the veterans appreciate it." Vogler said people serve because they think this country and what it stands for is worth serving. "Our country isn't perfect, but it's worth serving and saving." Personal data at college exposed. No evidence info exported during recent cyber attack. As the investigation continues into a cyber attack 5 weeks ago, Heartland Community College has informed faculty, staff, and students that some personal information may have been accessed. Information of former students and employees may also have been accessed in the cyber attack that was discovered on October 5th, according to the college. Scott Bross, chief information officer, said the cyber criminals gained access to a system that contained confidential information, but the consultants working with the college have not found evidence that the information was exported from the system. If any individual's information was transferred out, the college will notify the individual directly, said Bross. The college initially contacted the Normal Police Department, and the FBI is also involved. "It is an ongoing criminal investigation, and information on who may be behind the attack, or whether they are within or outside of the county, or whether the attacker or attackers have been identified, is not being disclosed," said Heartland spokesman Steve Fast. "A third-party forensic team has not been able to find the point of entry that started the cyber attack. The attack had the earmark of a ransomware attack in which files are encrypted and held hostage until a ransom is paid." Bross said, "We did not need to pursue that path because the college had the information backed up in other locations. But the attack was costly in other ways, disrupting online operations at a time when nearly all classes were being taught online, and tying up personnel working to recover systems. About 60% of the college's 200 servers were directly affected by the attack, but Bross said everything had to be disconnected to determine what was affected. He said the college is about 80% of the way back. First priority went to getting classes back online. That took about a week. The next challenge is spring semester registration, which started Tuesday for current students. It's been a real cleaning house experience to make sure all devices connected to the network have up-to-date security systems, said Bross. We're closing all the doors and checking all the corners, he said. The college has added new security measures, including an EDR, or Endpoint Detection and Response security system, that monitors for unusual activity and notifies the college if any is detected. The college also is using an email filtration system to help identify potential threats sent through emails. Bross said cyber criminals in the past have included malware in emails and more recently use impersonation as a tactic, tricking someone into believing an email is from their employer or bank. His advice is to not open any attachment that looks unusual or suspicious and not to respond directly to emails that are requesting personal information. Fast said employees will go through cybersecurity training, just as they might go through other annual training on such things as preventing sexual harassment. Young COVID victim's family urges precaution. Danny Cater, 30, died on November 3rd. Youngest McLean County fatality. Danny Cater always concerned herself with doing the right thing. She was a rules follower, said her father, Rob Rubin. She was the moral compass of our family, said her husband, Tim Cater. That included wearing a mask and making sure that she remained socially distant from people outside her household during the COVID-19 pandemic. Throughout this pandemic, she has held us all accountable, said her mother, Tina Rubin. She made sure we followed the things that the CDC was saying. In a cruel irony, illustrating the seriousness of COVID-19, Danny Cater of Bloomington became McLean County's youngest COVID victim when she died on November 3rd at the age of 30. The following day, McLean County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight reported the death of a female in her 30s with no known underlying health conditions who was not associated with any long-term care facilities. Danny Cater was McLean County's 39th COVID-related death. Since then, two more county residents have died. This is a terrible reminder of the seriousness of this virus and the importance of taking steps to protect everyone around you, McKnight said at the time. While it has often been older individuals with underlying conditions that are hospitalized, young, healthy individuals are not immune to complications from this disease. No one can guarantee whether they will have a mild illness or serious complications due to COVID-19. I had no idea she was so sick, Tina Rubin said. I thought we were dealing with a minor case. It happened so quickly. That's why we want to do this. Interviews about Danny, her mother said. We want her story out there. People don't get it, COVID's seriousness. People don't understand it. It doesn't just affect people who have a short lifespan. Tim Cater of Bloomington and Bob and Tina Rubin of Normal, formerly of Mount Zion, spoke with the Pantograph on Tuesday. Danny grew up in Mount Zion, a village near Decatur in Macon County. Her parents described her growing up as a person who didn't seek the limelight, but was a good student who did the right thing, took responsibility, and enjoyed her friends and horseback riding. Competing in horse shows in central Illinois helped to teach her that she wouldn't win every time, her mother recalled. She learned there's a lot of things that are out of your control, Tina Rubin said. Tim Cater got to know Danny at drumline camp in high school and their friendship evolved into a dating relationship. She was loving, sweet, and caring, he said. It was your classic high school sweetheart love story, he said. In Mount Zion High School, we wrote out what our lives would be, and that's the way it played out until now. After they graduated from high school, they went to college. They married in 2014 and moved to Bloomington. Danny has worked as an accountant for Kepler Vision in Bloomington. Tim works as an engineer with Precision Planting in Tremont. After retirement, Danny's parents relocated to Normal to live near Danny and Tim. On October 27th, Danny noticed she had lost some of her sense of taste and smell. The couple figured it was COVID, so they both quarantined at home. The following day, she was tested for COVID and on October 31st received the results that she was positive for the virus. But because she wasn't having serious trouble breathing and following reassurances from a doctor, we weren't really concerned for ourselves at that point, Tim Cater said. We thought, give it a week and it'll work its way through. On November 2nd, he bought an oximeter and clipped it to Danny's finger to measure the oxygen level in her blood. It's supposed to be above 95%. Hers was 60. Right then, it just hit us that she shouldn't be at home trying to deal with this, so we called an ambulance, Cater said. Danny was taken to Carl Broman Medical Center in Normal, where she was admitted to intensive care and initially responded well to oxygen. Because of COVID restrictions, her family couldn't be with her, so Danny communicated with them by texting. Monday night, November 2nd, things started to go downhill for her, her husband recalled. They put her on a ventilator, but it didn't do anything for her. The next step was a procedure called an extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or ECMO, which added oxygen to her blood. The amount of resources they put to trying to save her, I don't think we have gotten that anyplace else. They tried everything they could think of. Despite those efforts, Danny Cater died on November 3rd. The nightmare for the family was not just losing her so quickly, but not being able to see her because of COVID restrictions. It's a hard thing for a family, Bob Rubin said. You are not at the bedside. Your loved one is in there all alone, Tim Cater said. He wanted to be by her side. I remember crying in the car, he said. Cater doesn't know how his wife got COVID. She was always incredibly careful about having her mask on and social distancing from others, he said. No one who tested positive was contact traced to her. He has since tested positive for COVID, so he's continuing his quarantine, as are Danny's parents, who have both tested negative. What's the family's message? One is to buy an oximeter. The other is more personal. Danny was always bothered on Facebook by people not taking COVID seriously and people not wearing masks, but she was too sweet to tell them, Tim Cater said. The best way I can honor her is by taking precautions. It's absolutely about loving your neighbors. This is serious, her father said. It's not a political issue. COVID can strike, and it can strike in a hurry. We want to get this message out and save people from grief. This getting the word out is something she would have wanted us to do, her mother said. If we could use her story to help others, she would be happy. Today's Flick Fact question. Franklin Park, a few blocks east of downtown, is one of Bloomington's most beautiful parks. If a proposal facing the state legislature back in the 1860s had not failed, what would there be there instead? The answer? The University of Illinois. After seeing the founding of Illinois State Normal University in Normal in 1857, founder Jesse Fell sought to make this area the higher education center of Illinois by making a bid to locate the University of Illinois in Bloomington near Franklin Park. But state politics won out, and Urbana won the bid, with the U of I opening there in 1867. Few realize that ISU is actually 10 years older than U of I. Today in history. Today is Wednesday, November 11th, the 316th day of 2020. We have 50 days left in this year, and today is Veterans Day. Today's highlight: on November 11th, 1918, fighting in World War I ended as the Allies and Germany signed an armistice in the Forest of Compiègne. On this day in 1620, 41 pilgrims aboard the Mayflower, anchored off of Massachusetts, signed a compact calling for a body politic. In 1831, former slave Nat Turner, who'd led a slave uprising, was executed in Jerusalem, Virginia. In 1889, Washington became the 42nd state. In 1921, the remains of an unidentified American service member were interred in a tomb of the unknown soldier at Arlington National Cemetery in a ceremony presided over by President Warren G. Harding. In 1929, the Ambassador Bridge, spanning the Detroit River between Michigan and Windsor, Ontario, Canada, was dedicated. In 1942, during World War II, Germany completed its occupation of France. And in 1965, Rhodesia proclaimed its independence from Britain. And how time flies locally: from the past pages of the Pantograph 100 years ago, November 11th, 1920. Today is Armistice Day. American Legion Post 56 threw a big dance last night at the Coliseum, with George Goforth's 15-piece orchestra providing the music. But today, businesses in downtown Bloomington stayed open because there was no celebration there. 75 years ago, November 11th, 1945, Mrs. Fred Kappen has died after a long illness. She was one of Bloomington's leading cultural and social figures for almost 50 years. Mrs. Kappen was the first president of the Victory Hall Boys Home in Normal and remained active in its affairs throughout her life. 50 years ago, November 11th, 1970, Richard Weber, a 1966 Bloomington High School graduate, is taking a 2-year Peace Corps assignment to a village in Bolivia. He will help farmers improve their wheat crops by showing them how to use high-yield fertilizers. Plowing is still done with oxen and wooden plows. And 25 years ago today, November 11th, 1995, William Kerber, 60, is retiring from the Normal Fire Department after 26 years. He joined in 1969, the year Normal began hiring full-time firefighters. Kerber recalled a lot of what he saw in those years. The 1980 Alexander Lumber Fire came up more than once. Heartland feeds student success. Hannah Lindsay of Danvers, a student at Heartland Community College, hasn't spent much time on campus lately, with nearly all of her classes moved to online delivery. But Tuesday, she drove through a parking lot next to the Workforce Development Center, where faculty and staff greeted her with cheers, waving welcome signs. She left with a hot meal of pizza, Heartland swag information about resources, and a warm feeling. It shows that they care about the students, said Lindsay. They treat you like you're more than a number. That was exactly the point, said Sarah D.L. Hunt, Vice President of Enrollment and Student Services. It was timed for after midterms, when students can be feeling a little anxious and stressed, said D.L. Hunt. In a normal semester, we would have events on campus with food. We know food is always popular with students. But with COVID-19, pandemic precautions in place, the usual events weren't possible. So the college organized Feed Your Success. In addition to a meal, students received information about resources available to help them as they near the end of the semester and about registration for spring semester, which started Tuesday for current students. It was a way to just check in with them and ask them how they're doing and remind them that there are a slew of staff out there to support you and who care about you. In addition to the food drive-through in Normal on Monday evening and Tuesday, similar events took place on Heartland's Pontiac and Lincoln sites. The college also hosted a drive-in movie recently on Normal's Rab Road campus that received good response. Students are craving just seeing people, said D.L. Hunt. They aren't the only ones. It has been tough on our faculty and staff who miss seeing students as well. Emma Munson of Bloomington said, "It felt very welcoming to me to see people lined up, waving signs saying, 'Glad you're here virtually and in person, and we think you're amazing.'" Spring semester will once again be mostly online. But D.L. Hunt said the college is offering more classes with structured components, meaning they will have specific time for students to log in. A lot of our students wanted a little more structure and a little more opportunity to interact with instructors and other students, she said. Bloomington's five-day forecast, today there'll be plenty of sunshine. Expect a full day of sunshine with average relative humidity of 65%. It'll be clear tonight with a low of 31 degrees. Plenty of sunshine tomorrow. Expect a full day of sunshine with temperatures ranging between 55 and 28 degrees. Friday will be mostly sunny and cooler, temperatures ranging between 44 and 29 degrees. Saturday, it will be cloudy and possibly becoming rainy. The high is expected to be 53 and the low 43 degrees. And Sunday, it will be mostly cloudy and windy. The high temperature is expected to be 60 degrees and the low 34 degrees. I'll take a short break now and then return with the second half of the Pantograph for November 11th, 2020. Please stay tuned.